Now continuing,
in verse 7 of this chapter, God plainly shows that the first day of unleavened bread was ordained as a Sabbath. He does not plainly show it here, does he? Does he? What would plainly show here mean that it was a Sabbath?
The word itself.
The word itself, that's correct. Since it's not used, it doesn't plainly say here that it is a Sabbath. See? God plainly shows that the first day of unleavened bread was ordained as a Sabbath. No servile work was to be done therein. It was a holy convocation. You see how carefully, how subtly something like that can shift in there? Even though it is called a Sabbath, okay, it doesn't plainly say it here. It does not plainly say it here. It does in John 19, for that Sabbath was a high Sabbath. Okay? Immediately following this commandment, God introduces the sheaf of the first fruits, verse 10. Does, I may ask you, verse 10 follow verse 7? Or is there 8 and 9 in between it? There is 8 and 9 between it. As it talks, the first day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no servile work therein. And the seventh day is a holy convocation. You shall do no servile work in it. That's verse 8. And verse 9 says, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say to them, when you become into the land, you shall reap the harvest. Verse 11 then says, and he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted for you on the morrow, that is the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. So it's not immediately following, is it? Okay? Immediately following this commandment, God introduces the offering of the sheaf of the first fruits, verse 10. Verse 11 then explains, continuing on with the same thought, and he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted for you. On the morrow after the Sabbath shall the priest wave it. Leviticus 23:11. It is obvious that the context itself proves, context itself proves, or all in caps, that this Sabbath is the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. If it were obvious, it proved that, why would there be a controversy? Now, the point was brought up that if you follow his logic carefully, it would be obvious under the assumptions of his logic that the seventh day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, also being the equivalent of a Sabbath, that it would logically follow that you would have to start on the day after the last day of unleavened bread. Okay? So it doesn't logically follow. I mean, it is obvious that the context itself proves, now I'm quoting from his paper, that this Sabbath is the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Otherwise, confusion would have set in. If God meant that the regular weekly Sabbath, if God had meant the regular weekly Sabbath and thus changed the thought, how dare God change the thought, I will add, he would have said the weekly Sabbath in order to distinguish it from the annual Sabbath which he had just ordained in verse 7 of this chapter. See? So if he ordained the first day as a holy day, then the seventh day is a holy day, and his logic falls apart because it would have to be construed as the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Okay? Notice now the story flow continuing on in his article here, and sequence of events during this pivotal spring festival of 7 days. First, the Passover lamb was observed on the evening of the 14th of Nisan, symbolizing Jesus Christ, our Passover. Then the first day of unleavened bread was observed as an annual Sabbath with a holy meeting. Then the following day, after the integral part of the spring feast, on the morrow after that Sabbath, the very next morning, the wave sheaf offering was performed by the priest. This event was an integral part of the spring festival. It was not delayed until the morrow after the weekly Sabbath, if the weekly Sabbath was the same as the first or the last holy day of unleavened bread by coincidence, then those who claim it is the correct day claim the wave sheaf offering then came after the seven-day festival. And that sentence does, I still can't make logic out of that sentence, okay? That is sheer nonsense. It was an integral part of the spring festival. Therefore, it did not occur after the festival, but it had to occur during it. Okay? Now, the Septuagint does say, and on the first day. But that is not a translation from the Hebrew at all. That is an interpretation. The Hebrew word for Sabbath is Shabbat, which is seventh day Sabbath. Now, let's come down to verse 15. There are several important things for us here. And this is correctly translated. You don't have to change a single thing here. You shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, seven Sabbaths shall be complete. And that is Sabbath. We used to say years ago when we tried to show a Monday Pentecost that that was weeks. However, that's entirely incorrect. It is Sabbath. The word here is Shabbat. No problem, no doubt, clear as can be. So you have to have seven Sabbaths shall be complete, even unto the morrow after the seventh Sabbath. Now, in order to count just weeks alone, you have to change that to weeks. Here, Sabbath is properly translated from Shabbat. Shall you number 50 days, and you shall offer a new meal offering. Okay? Let's go to Deuteronomy 16. Deuteronomy 16, where we have the word weeks, and weeks is from a different word, which is Shavua, with kind of a G guttural sound on it. So I won't try and put that in there, just Shavua. Now, there's a big difference between Shabbat and Shavua. Okay? Let's look at Deuteronomy 16 and read it. Verse 9. 7 weeks shall you number unto you. Begin to number the 7 weeks, and that is Shavuah in the plural, from such time as you begin to put the sickle to the corn. When do you begin? It's not clear, is it? Just says from what time you begin to put the sickle to the corn. It's not clear. Okay, number one, this doesn't tell us which day to start, does it? It just says when you begin, 7 weeks. Okay? You shall keep the feast of weeks. It says unto the Lord your God with a tribute of the freewill offering in your hand. Okay. Okay. Now, this does not tell us when to begin, and it doesn't tell us when to stop. It gives us a generality of when to begin, when you begin to put the sickle to the corn. What else is missing in Deuteronomy 16 and the reason why we need Leviticus 23? What else is missing in Deuteronomy 16? Though we are to keep the Feast of Weeks, there's something missing on how to calculate it. Counting after the Sabbath, well, you're there to count 7 weeks, but what else is missing? The 50th day, that's correct. So Deuteronomy 16 is informational, but Deuteronomy 16 cannot establish a definite day. It would be like, keep the Sabbaths of the Lord. That establishes the fact we're to keep the Sabbaths of the Lord, but it doesn't tell us which day. Okay? So Deuteronomy 16 is general information, but it does not give a specific day. So that's why we have to come back to Leviticus 23. Now let's look at Leviticus 23 again. Okay? And we have to count. Verse 15, you shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. So you have to have 7 Sabbaths. Verse 16 is also very important. Even unto the morrow after the 7th Sabbath shall you number 50 days. Now what we have here is double bookkeeping entry. Any of you here are familiar with accounting? Bookkeeping? What is double bookkeeping entry due to accounting? Makes everything balanced. The beginning has to be the same and the ending has to be the same. That's why God did it this way, so you get the right day. Okay? Now this does mean on the morrow after the Sabbath is the weekly Sabbath. It can't be any other. Why can't it be any other? If I make that statement, I must do what? Prove it, right? Okay? We will prove it. I will pass out to you 4 years of Hebrew calendars. I made copies of the pages. Okay? So, if we can pass these around, just take one and keep it on the bottom. Okay? Now what I want you to do is to take for the year 1987-1988, since civil calendar 1987 on one page, civil calendar 1988 on the other page, or the Hebrew calendar 5748, which it is on both of them. Okay? I want you to go to the page on the right-hand page. Okay? The one on the right-hand page. You will see something very important if you look at it. You will see, I want you to look at the Hebrew calendar side. Okay? You see the numbers right at the top there at the end of the first week. You have a regular Sabbath, which is listed 15, and then 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. Okay. If you count those days, you have 8 days, correct? Don't you? What are each one of these days called as you go through it? They're days of Pasch. Or Passover. Okay, they have a little different name for the days in the middle of the week there. Okay. What strikes you obviously as being incorrect in the numbering of the days? It shows no 14th Passover at all whatsoever, period, does it? Begins with the 15th. Okay? What's another thing that you see that's obvious? The feast went to the 22nd, through the 22nd. Exodus 12 tells us to what? Until the 1 and 21st day by Erev, which is the end of the day, at the end of the 21st. So they've got one extra day. So how do you keep 8 days of Passover? If you don't keep a 14th Passover, you slide it ahead. So then you have the 22nd instead of the 21st. Now, you never knew that, did you? There you go. Isn't that interesting? Okay. Now, you will also notice, what do we have here? Okay. What do we have here? The 15th day of the first month is on what day of the week? Okay. What is the 16th then? Okay. The reason I got this for you is because here is a clear, perfect example of how you solve two problems. Okay. Number one, the way that it is presented in this paper, and I can't find it. Let me see if I can find it just a minute. Suffice to say is that Mr. Dankenbrink has said that it's incorrect to keep a Sunday Pentecost, because after all, that is a pagan day. And if you keep a pagan day, you can't be following God. Pray tell, what happens when Christmas falls on the Sabbath? Are you keeping a pagan day if you keep the Sabbath that day? Right. You're absolutely correct. The comment was made that according to the Roman calendar, every day is a pagan day. So you got him in his reasoning. It is wrong. There's no such thing as a pagan day. There is a day which pagans observe that they have named for what they want. If you go through their observations, you are keeping a day which the pagans claim for their own. But God did not create any time inherently pagan. Okay? The reason that I have you with 1988 is because I want you to see how they must count for Pentecost using the Pharisaical way of counting, and you will see that if you count that way, you will always come to the 6th of Sivan. So this calendar makes it very easy. You just drop down 7 weeks until you come to where it says 6-7, which is in the month of Sivan. If you turn the page this way, you have Nisan Iyar Sivan. Okay? 6th of Sivan, and tell me what day it falls on. It falls on a Sunday. And when he wrote this article, he didn't have enough sense to check it out and prove it first that it could possibly fall on a Sunday. Okay? Now, what they do, they say that on the morrow after the Sabbath means the first holy day. That's the way the Pharisees say. So you look at this little trusty calendar here. And sure enough, you come to the 15th day, which we already determined was a regular weekly Sabbath, correct? Okay? Now, and in this case, it would be correct to have the wave sheaf offering on the next day, the 16th. Why? Because the first holy day and the weekly Sabbath are the same day in that particular year. Okay? Now it makes it very easy to count. You just start counting. Just number right next to it. For the first Sabbath, just mark 1. Second Sabbath, which then is 29, you mark 2. Third Sabbath, which is 6, you mark 3. The fourth Sabbath, then, which is a 13, you mark 4. 20 is 5. 27 is 6. And 5 is 7. And what does the instruction say? Even unto the morrow after the seventh Sabbath. Correct? Can they be right in their calculations some of the time? Answer, yes. Now let me read this again so we go through it. You shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. We just did it, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Verse 16, even unto the morrow after the 7th Sabbath. They must change this word from Shabbat to Shavuah in order to make it read week. In the Hebrew, it is Shabbat, not Shavuah. Okay? After the 7th Sabbath shall you number 50 days. Now that's very specific then, isn't it? 7 times 7 is how much? 49. Plus 1 is 50. Okay? Which in this particular case is the 6th of Sivan. I never knew that. Let's go to the next one. Let's go to 88, 89, to, or as it is in the Hebrew, 57, 49. Okay? You have that, 5749? Okay. This particular year, 5749 or 1989, the Passover was in the middle of the week. The first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread was on a Thursday, the 15th. See where it's 15? All right. The day after the first day is the 16th, which is Friday. Okay? Now, let's count 7 Sabbaths. And please understand that it doesn't say count 7 weeks. But where it does say weeks, those are, as Rebecca brought up, complete. Which means in Hebrews days 1 through 7. That's a complete week. What is a deficient week? We're looking at it right here. A deficient week is any part of a week that is less than a whole. Okay? Now, let's count 7 Sabbaths. Okay? 17 is 1, 24 is 2, 1 is 3, 8 is 4, 15 is 5, 22 is 6, 29 is 7. You got that? Now, the problem was clearly pointed out. Let's read verse 16. We found the 7th Sabbath, which is after the 29th day of the month of Iyar, correct? Now right there? That is 29. Month of Iyar, that is the 7th Sabbath. Is that not correct? Okay. Verse 16 of Leviticus 23 says, even unto the morrow after the 7th Sabbath shall you number 50 days. We have 7 Sabbaths, but how many days? Okay. We have 43. That's why he says count 50 days. Even unto the morrow after the 7th Sabbath. Double entry bookkeeping, remember. Because you come to the 7th Sabbath and the morrow after the 7th Sabbath is the 1st of Sivan. And the 6th of Sivan does not come until Friday. Is that clear? Does everybody understand that? That's why you don't count from the first holy day during the days of unleavened bread, because you cannot come up with seven Sabbaths and then come to tomorrow after the seventh Sabbath. You are short 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 days. Because if you're 43 days, the 43rd day is the day after the seventh Sabbath, not 50 days. So what do you have to do to make it fit that formula? You have to say that even unto the morrow after the seventh week instead of Sabbath, and you violate the scriptures because the word is not Shabuah, the word is Shabbat. Okay? Now this is the way, the only way to solve this problem is to sit down and look at several calendars. Okay? Now, you have to have seven Sabbaths. Deuteronomy 16 says you have to have seven complete weeks, not two deficient weeks and five complete weeks, but you must have seven complete weeks. You do not have these here. Okay? When would Pentecost really be, if you counted correctly? If you begin on the morrow after the weekly Sabbath, your first day would be day 18 of the first month. And then you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and Pentecost would actually fall on the 8th of Sivan instead of the 6th. The question is, when it is counted the way the Pharisees counted it, does it fluctuate from day to day during the week? The answer is yes, it does. It's mostly Wednesday, Friday, a Sunday, and Monday. And he says in another paper, anyone who keeps a Monday has got to be absolutely, you know, they are put down as the worst nerds in the world. So he goes to a 6 or 7, and guess what? There's a Monday Pentecost. Now what is this logic going to do? Be shattered, okay? Okay. See, when we get tough, sticky, false prophets running in our midst, we've got to dig a little deeper to make sure we're right. Okay, now, does everyone understand this so far? I don't want anyone to be lost. If you go counting from the first holy day being the 16th of Nisan, and you count seven Sabbaths, you come up 5 days short. Why do you come up 5 days short? Because you do not have complete weeks, days 1 through 7. Because you're starting where? Instead of starting on the first day of the week to count, you're starting where? You're starting on the sixth day of the week. Yeah, right toward the end. So you count your first Sabbath. Is that a week or 1 day? That's 1 day. So that's why you're short. See, that's why accountants can catch you wrong in your accounting. See? If you put, in this case, $2 in the till and count it for seven, what are you going to come up? $5 short. Right? Okay. Okay, let's go to the next year. Let's take a look at the next year. 5750. Now remember, if the wave sheaf offering, as claimed by the Pharisees and by Mr. Dankenbrink, and I'll have a little bit to say about the Pharisees next week, if you begin counting, including the 16th of the first month, or the 16th of Nisan, now do you have year 1990? That's this year. Do you have that? 5750. Everybody have that page? Okay. In this particular case, the weekly Sabbath is the 19th of the first month. To properly count, this time we're going to properly count, okay? From the morrow after the Sabbath, the 19th. You see the Sabbath of the 19th there? The morrow is the 20th. From including that day, you count 7 weeks. So your first Sabbath is 26. Your next Sabbath, the second one is 3. The third one is 10. Fourth one is 17. The fifth one is 24. The second is the sixth one. The seventh one is 9. And so, lo and behold, on the morrow after the seventh Sabbath is 10. So this year, the Feast of Pentecost comes on the 10th of Sivan, or, if you look across the page, the 3rd of June. We have all of the elements, don't we? We have 7 Sabbaths. We have 49 days, plus 1 is 50. And unto the morrow after the seventh Sabbath shall you number 50 days. Now let's go back to the one we just put back, 5749. And let's review that again. Okay? Notice, we're going to count the way the Pharisees count to begin with. They say, according to their calculations, that the day the wave sheaf offering was to be given was on the 16th. You see that? The very next day is the first Sabbath. That is Sabbath 1, the way they count. Sabbath 2 is the 24th. Sabbath 3 is the first. Sabbath 4 is the 8th. Sabbath 5 is the 15th. Sabbath 6 is the 22nd. Sabbath 7 is the 29th. See, because you don't count just weeks. You count Sabbaths unto the morrow after the seventh Sabbath. So if you take the next day after the seventh Sabbath, you come to the first of Sivan and not the sixth of Sivan. Do you see that? Okay? That's why they are short. That's how you can tell that's incorrectly counted. So in order for them to count, they have 7 Sabbaths but 2 deficient weeks. So they only instead of taking 7 complete weeks, they have 5 complete weeks and 2 deficient weeks, being the first week and the last week. So therefore, the 6th of Sivan in 5749 comes on Friday. Okay, now does that make it clearer as to how they counted incorrectly? Now, 1991, which is next year, okay? And I'll have to, thank you for bringing that up. I'll have to make a page where that incident does occur, okay? 1991, 57, 51. Everyone have that? Good translation. You shall count 7 Sabbaths to the 50 days. Well, in the case we just reviewed, you don't have 50 days after the seventh Sabbath. To the day. See? Okay. Your 49th day must always be a Sabbath day. Okay? That's correct. Okay, now, let's look at 1991, 57, 51, because there are times when that Pharisaic counting is correct. There are some years in which it is correct. Okay? Here we have the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread is a regular weekly Sabbath. Okay? If the first day is a regular weekly Sabbath, when do you wave the sheaf offering? On the 16th. That is correct. So, part of the time, they are correct. And then you can just go down and count the weeks again. 22 is 1, 29 is 2, 6 is 3, 13 is 4, 20 is 5, 27 is 6, and 5 is 7. To tomorrow after the seventh Sabbath, 6 is Sivan, is the correct day in that particular year. Okay? So it is correct only in those years when the first holy day and the weekly Sabbath coincide. That is why God tells us to count. Because you go back and look at these now. 5751, it falls on a Sunday. 5750, the 6th of Sivan, falls on a Wednesday. Now, if it was a set, fixed day of the month always, what would the command be in the Bible? And he would say, moreover, on the sixth day of the third month, you shall have a holy convocation. No need to call it Pentecost. Why? Because that means counting 50. There's no need to count 50. If it's always the sixth of Sivan, why would you have to count? You wouldn't have to count. Okay? Let's go back and review 1989, which is 5749. And the sixth of Sivan is on a Friday. And let's review 5748. And the sixth of Sivan is on a Sunday. Okay. Now, I'm going to take these pages and I'm going to mail them out with this tape when I send it out so everyone can follow along with it. I might also mention on this tape that someone wrote in and said, by what authority are the holy days established? Well, I have here a comprehensive Hebrew calendar which goes from 1900 to the year 2100. Okay, so it has everything in here. So we don't have to worry about getting those little pocket calendars from anywhere. We'll have it right here. And I will try and find next time a Feast of Unleavened Bread where then we have the first holy day is on a Sunday and see how we handle that. See how that happens. Okay? Can't find it yet. I'm paging through right now. Now, in the year 1950, the 15th day of the first month was on a Sunday. How then do you do that? The Passover was on a regular Sabbath. 14th was on a Sabbath. How do you handle that? I think the way that it should be handled is this way. It has to occur during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. The Passover is on the Sabbath, so since there is no day after the feast, you would have to wave it on the 15th in that particular case, after the weekly Sabbath. And that comes along very, very, very rarely. That is a really rare one indeed.